The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Reyes, Judge Cochran, the Honorable Matthew E. Johnson presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today's date is January 25, 2022. This panel of the court today has four cases on its calendar, three of which will be submitted with oral argument and one of which will be submitted without oral argument solely on the briefs. The first case set for oral argument is number A21-1115, Lisa Winkowski versus J. Vincent Winkowski. As counsel know, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and appellant's counsel will have an opportunity for rebuttal of up to 5 minutes. Counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and your client and begin your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Thomas Brown on behalf of the appellant, Jay Winkowski, here before the court on appeal from an HRO. And may it please the court, counsel, we're respectfully asking that the court reverse the district court's determination that appellant's conduct constituted harassment under the statute and justified the issuance of an order for protection. We're here on a very narrow issue, really, as it relates only to the definition of repeated incidents under the HRO statute. We're not challenging the court's findings of fact with respect to the appellant's conduct, but rather the court's interpretation as to whether that conduct arose to the level of being repeated incidents as defined under Minnesota law. I say under Minnesota law because the statute itself has no definition of repeated incidents. So we have to look to what are largely unpublished cases to discern whether the court committed error in determining whether appellant's conduct reached the level of being not just repeated, but repeated incidents. And I think it's important that the court understands that distinction because in the district court opinion, the court went through ad nauseum talking about the incidents themselves. And I think the language on page 3 of the court's opinion is really the focus of what the court looked at in terms of the different forms of conduct that took place over what the court determined to be an extended period of time.
Mr. Braun?
Yes.
Good morning. If I could stop you there. So you said that really we have a narrow issue of what is the definition of repeated incidents under the harassment restraining order statute. Don't we start by looking at determining first whether the statute by itself is unambiguous?
I think you do. That's the initial step.
Okay. Yes. And do you, is it your position that the statute is unambiguous?
I think the statute is unambiguous as it relates.
Yes. Okay. So we just look at the plain meaning. And when we look at the plain meaning, we also look at what the words mean and whether they're defined. And as you noted, repeated incidents is not defined in the statute. So from that point, can't we look at dictionary definitions to determine what those words mean?
Correct.
Okay. So how do you interpret repeated incidents? How do you, according to dictionary definitions and the plain meaning of it?
I think Flomo, the Bierke versus Flomo case does a good job of accurately defining both terms, repeated, meaning occurring again and again. And, you know, we don't really take issue, frankly, with that definition and have much argument whether the appellant's conduct occurred again and again in this case. It really hangs on the definition of incident. And, there, the Bierke versus Flomo case defined incident as being a definite and separate occurrence. And as it relates to appellant's conduct here, we believe that the appellant's conduct constitutes one incident or occurrence. Because really the dispute in this case is involving parenting time on one occasion. The appellant went to respondent's home on one occasion involving one incident of missed parenting time and had essentially one argument related to that single issue that gave rise on that one single day. So the scope of the term incident, I think, is really at the forefront of this case. And the case law that the court has interpreted in the past really does not give great definition to help kind of guide this issue before this court. You know, when we look at Bierke versus Flomo, and that's what the district court really kind of focused on, I think, when issuing its order, you know, that conduct constituted essentially 12 hours of harassing conduct that spanned 2 days. And the court determined ultimately in the Bierke case that because the conduct spanned 2 days, that there were separate incidents. And the court in this case tried to liken the facts of the appellant's conduct to Bierke by defining the length of the dispute as being an extended period and really talking about the different forms of contact that were taking place. You know, in this case, we had texting, calling, knocking on the door, honking the car horn, and ringing the doorbell. The court ultimately concluded in its opinion that if the petitioner and the appellant only had done one of those things, honk the horn, texted on his phone, that would not have constituted repeated incidents in this case to justify an HRO. And we think that logic is misplaced. And it certainly stands in opposition to the court's rulings in Beach, where you had essentially a two-sentence statement that the court determined did not constitute harassment. And certainly Rickmeyer. In the Rickmeyer case, we had a 30-minute period of what the court determined to be repeated contacts, which constituted harassment. But there was it was a 30-minute period where the appellant in that case, Mr. Woodall, had taken photos of the respondent, had videoed the respondent, and threatened to SWAT the respondent's home. And there was a call to law enforcement in that case. And the Court of Appeals in that matter determined that the conduct did not rise to the level of meeting the definition of incidents, plural, under the statute, and dismissed the HRO petition. So this case
would your position in this case be different if appellant had remained in the driveway for 8 hours and didn't get out of the car until the seventh hour, but was making repeated FaceTime calls during the first hour?
Yeah. You know, it's a slippery slope, right, where you start to look at hypotheticals of elongating the conduct or shortening the conduct. Yeah, I think that the intention of the legislature was to allow individuals to petition for HROs where you have separate and distinct incidents that are harassing in nature. So I don't know that it would be that different if it was 7 hours. I mean, the court is kind of fixated on that extended period of time. That's not in the statute. I think that there is the court needs, I think, a bright line test to really look at these kind of incidents to determine whether they are in fact separate incidents. And really, you know, the court does this very frequently in the criminal law context when we're looking at, does conduct constitute a single behavioral incident or is it a separate behavioral incident? And I think that's really kind of what the legislature is getting at here. Is this a single isolated incident or is it multiple incidents over an extended period of time?
Mr. Braun, yes. So you have suggested a bright line test or a rule. And so I'd like to turn that question around and ask you, you know, how would you, if you were to suggest to us a rule of law, or perhaps a set of criteria, or perhaps some sort of balancing test, what would that be?
I think the court need not create a new law, but borrow one that is already in existence that relates to whether the conduct is essentially a single behavioral incident. You know, same language, really, and the court, district court judges are well-versed in dealing with this issue as it relates to criminal law. And there, State versus Ryland is a seminal case that talks about whether a defendant's conduct is a singular behavioral incident. And really the fact analysis looks at whether the conduct was essentially unitary or divisible, right? And also whether there's a single objective. In the criminal context, is whether there's a single criminal objective. But in the harassment context, it could certainly be construed in a very similar manner. Is there a similar harassing objective? And in this case, there is only but one issue, and that is the appellant's parenting time. Now, if he would have essentially gone home and started to text message the petitioner about, excuse me, the respondent about child support or a different issue, that to me are separate incidents that are not temporally linked. But here you've got one incident over 2 hours that has that single criteria or objective. And I think the legislature's intention of creating or requiring incidents, plural, is to not allow the floodgates to open. And that's the concern, I think, here, is that if a two-hour incident related to one concern, parenting time, constitutes harassment, and the courts, district court's reasoning were to be upheld, I think that there would be a significant concern that the legislature's intent that there be separate incidents be eviscerated. You know, the district court's suggesting that if only one of those types of conduct were to have occurred, that this wouldn't be essentially harassment. So if he would have texted her simply 50 times instead of going to the home, knocking on the door, you know, that in fact would not have constituted harassment under the statute. And where does that analysis essentially begin and end? I think it'd be very difficult for the court to articulate that. But if you look to, I think, a more commonsensical approach where you look at the intention of the communications, and here it was all singular for the appellant to obtain his parenting time. That's really what this dispute was about. Whether 2 hours is an extended period of time and how the court analyzes that as it being repeated incidents, I think under the court's analysis, the district court's analysis, had it been a 5-minute occurrence and he showed up, texted, called, honked his horn, maybe even two of those three, that it would have constituted a harassment restraining order because there was separate conduct related to, again, that singular purpose. And we believe that type of reasoning is misplaced under the definition of the harassment restraining order. So this matter is unique because I think it falls really between Bierke and Rickmeyer. And the courts, I think, do need some instruction with respect to and guidance how to handle circumstances like this. And we have an evolving way of communication with social media, text messaging, telephone, and I think guidance is certainly needed for the court to avoid having these circumstances where you may have repeated contact, but again, not repeated incidents. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Braun. Counsel for respondent, you may identify yourself and your client and begin your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Carrie Osowski, and I represent the respondent, Lisa Winkowski, who asks that this court affirm the district court's August 11th, 2021 order, which granted a harassment restraining order following a hearing. Appellant's actions on June 25th, 2021 rose to the level of harassment. I repeat, appellant's actions on June 25th, 2021 rose to the level of harassment. The standard of review in this case is abuse of discretion, which means that this court must uphold the district court's findings of fact and determinations of credibility. Judge Reyes, you asked a question of appellant's attorney regarding whether the statute is unambiguous, and I agree that it is unambiguous. That means that we need to look at the plain meaning of these words, and the statute does not provide a definition, so we turn to the dictionary. Acts are defined as anything being done, to be done, or performance.
Ms. Osowski, if I could, I'd actually like to focus on the repeated incidents portion.
Okay.
So, and thank you for answering that. That was actually the question I was going to ask you as well. So repeated, that is an adjective, correct?
Correct.
And that essentially, I don't think that's in dispute. It's actions that are repeated incidents. The incidents part is what's, I think, the key controversy here. So incidents is a noun.
Yes.
So you've got an adjective and you've got a noun. But you argue that those two actually constitute an adjective clause. But an adjective clause contains a subject and a verb, a relative pronoun, and then the adjective clause itself follows the noun it describes. So how does repeated incidents, how does that qualify as an adjective clause? Where's the verb in repeated incidents?
I don't believe that I did refer to it as an adjective clause. I believe I referred to it as an adjective phrase, because it is multiple words that do modify the word or the rest of the sentence, the acts, words, or gestures. So repeated incidents is just an adjective phrase. It's multiple words that are part of an adjective. It would not be an adjective clause. You are correct about that. There's a later portion of the statute that is an adjective clause. I'll get to that a little bit later, but repeated incidents is not in any way an adjective clause. You are correct about that. It is just an adjective phrase. And within that adjective phrase, repeated is what defines what type of incidents, meaning incidents that occur again and again. And an incident is defined as an occurrence. Now, and before I continue, does that answer your question, Your Honor?
It does in part, and you answer the next question of an incident being an occurrence. And so when you have that, harassment is defined as three single incidents of something happening, a physical assault or sexual assault, and et cetera, et cetera. And then you've got repeated incidents. So I guess my question is, my next question is, what is the subject and the object of this sentence? It appears that harassment is a subject, and then the three examples of a single incident are the object, and then repeated incidents is also an object of that sentence, correct?
No. Repeated incidents is that adjective phrase that modifies what type of acts, words, or gestures. Includes is the transitive verb in this sentence, meaning
I agree with you on transitive. I agree with you on includes. That is a transitive verb, but is a single incident, is that also an adjective phrase?
A single incident, are you referring to the earlier portion of the harassment statute before we get to the repeated incidents?
Correct.
That would be an adjective phrase defining what type of single incident. So again, a single incident of physical assault. Physical assault is the object of that sentence. The single incident defines what type of physical assault. You don't have to have multiple, you just have to have one.
Okay, so, okay, thank you.
I on this issue, I appreciate your use of grammatical concepts, but I'm not sure if I agree with how you do it or your result. So it seems to me that the object of harassment includes is a phrase that begins with incidents and then has a preposition of, the prepositional phrase of acts, words, or gestures. I'm taking out some adjectives. So I think I might see it similar to Judge Reyes in that I think incidents is an important element of it. You know, that's the that is the object of the phrase harassment includes. How would you respond to that? I guess maybe my difference between my way of looking at it and your way is that I think that there's a prepositional phrase following the word incidents, and together that's an entire phrase that is the object of harassment includes.
I'm just trying to think through how to answer that question in a way that makes sense. And I apologize, I basically approached this argument by diagramming this sentence based on what I learned from my syntax classes in undergrad. I do appreciate that incidents could be the object of this sentence, meaning harassment includes incidents. And then you look at what kind of incidents and their acts, words, or gestures. I think that regardless of which approach you use, whether the object is incidents or the object is the acts, words, or gestures, you're going to come to the same result, that appellant either, you know, he either made these acts, words, or gestures, and they were repeated incidents of these acts, words, or gestures, or the appellant repeated incidents, and the incidents included these acts, words, or gestures that were unwanted, that were intrusive, that had or were intended to have a substantial adverse effect on the safety, security, or privacy of the respondent. I don't think that whether or not it's incidents or acts, words, or gestures that is the object of the sentence is what's going to make or break this case, I would say.
Do you endorse completely the district court's reasoning, or the district court's, both its interpretation of the statute and its application? And I guess another, stated a different way, is the district court's that, you know, as reflected in page 3 and 4 of the memorandum, is that the best way to interpret the statute and the record in your client's favor, or do you have a refinement on it that you would prefer that we adopt?
I don't know that there's a refinement I would prefer. What I would point out to is footnote 1 of the order. In that order, the court states there was other activity happening, such as police calls, an appellant talking to the girls who were inside the house via FaceTime during the period in question. The activities I list above are the appellant's actions I consider most clearly to be harassing in nature. The court didn't say there was nothing else that was harassing in nature. And there are other cases that were referenced that do say, like, other things were happening, but we're going to focus on these specific incidents. These are the ones that were testified to most in depth. I mean, in this case, there's a lot of stuff that happened within the 2-hour window in which appellant was outside respondent's home. That 2-hour window isn't one incident. Each individual act, each individual occurrence of an act is a separate incident. So we have 28 FaceTime calls that occurred in about 20 to 21 minutes. Each FaceTime call is a separate incident. Appellant dialed on FaceTime, let the call ring. I don't know if the call ended itself or if he just gave up. So he hung up the phone, called again. Each act of terminating a FaceTime call ended that incident. He had 28 repeated incidents of FaceTime calls that occurred in a 20-minute window. He also rang respondent's doorbell and knocked on her door as well.
Ms. Osowski, if I may pause you there, because we are familiar with the record and what happened and what occurred. I think the key here, though, really is, what does the definition of incidents mean? And I just want to clarify one thing real quick, because you threw me for a loop a little bit when you said, you described it as an adjective phrase. Adjective phrase, I did a quick search, is not cited in your brief at all. You do talk about adjective clause. And so I was taking your brief as you presented it, describing repeated incidents as an adjective clause. So that's why I was asking you specific questions about adjective clause. But incidents, you define incidents as an occurrence or an event. That is different than what you're trying to, what it seems like you're describing as either a single act or a single word or a single gesture. So shouldn't we be looking, if we accept the plain language of the statute, what the what repeated incidents mean, and repeated incidents means repeated occurrences or events then, correct?
Correct.
And looking at the, I realize we don't have a lot of guidance here, but the non-precedential case of Bjerke does define incident as separate occurrences or events as well. And in that case, you had, they found that there was harassment, but it occurred over the course of 2 days. So there was a break there. Whereas here, we just have a 2-hour window, we have no break. So looking at repeated incidents, don't we look at just the overall occurrence? Here we had a 2-hour occurrence. So isn't that what we should be looking at?
Well, we didn't have a 2-hour occurrence. I would point the court to look at Peterson v. Meyer. In his reply brief, appellant does heavily lean on that case. But in that opinion, the court stated the messages on October 4 clearly constitute harassment. And that was a 1-hour window of time. I also would mention that I did listen to the oral arguments for several of the cases that were cited by both myself and appellant. And in the Bjerke oral arguments, the point was made of contemporaneous versus sequential. So going to an older case before the statute changed, Davidson v. Webb, that was an incident where someone went up to another individual, yelled profanities at them, shook his finger in his face, and poked him in the lip, all while still screaming at him. These were things that were happening contemporaneously. And in that case, the court correctly said this was one incident.
Right. But in Peterson, we had actually two separate incidents. We had messages that were sent on October 4th for an hour, and then 14 hours later, the appellant there contacted the respondent again and then sent another series of messages. So that appears to be two separate incidents.
It does. And it would be a lot easier to use that case as a comparison if, in that matter, Meyer hadn't sent messages again on October 5th, because then we would be looking at a 1-hour window of time, which is comparable to a 2-hour window of time. But like appellant said, we can sit and play around with hypotheticals all morning saying, well, if it goes this long, if he waited this long, what is that? And again, quite frankly, the Peterson court said the actions that were committed on October 4th, which included a 1-hour window of time in which he was sending messages on Our Family Wizard, that constitutes harassment. And that was statement was made after the statute changed and required repeated incidents.
I have that. Go ahead, Judge Cochran.
Just briefly, can you address appellant's argument that we should look to criminal law to define what is an incident and look to the case law regarding a singular behavioral incident in criminal law?
Yes, I would say criminal law is not applicable here. Again, the statute is not unambiguous, so we look at the plain meaning. The dictionary does provide that plain meaning. I know that appellant said in his reply brief that this is, you know, a harassment case is something that opens someone up to criminal liability that only happens if someone violates a harassment restraining order. This is only a civil case. If the civil law doesn't provide an explanation, like I said, we look at the dictionary. I do see that I'm out of time. I do just want to point out, I have spoken for 15 minutes. Appellant will get 5 minutes to respond. That's 20 combined minutes. During a 20-minute window of time, the appellant called respondent 28 separate times, 28 separate incidents. He committed harassment, and we ask that this court affirm the court's order. Thank you.
Before I have one more question for you, if Judge Cochran is finished, I'm not sure if you are, Judge Cochran.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, sure. You've made reference to the statutory amendment. I assume you're referring to the amendment in the year 2000.
Yes.
I don't think it was in the briefing, but before that amendment, the statute allowed a finding of harassment for repeated acts, words, or gestures. Yes. And then this legislature inserted, I think, two simple words, incidents of. And it seems to me that the district court's analysis of the current statute would have been appropriate before the 2000 amendment, when repeated acts, repeated gestures, repeated words would have constituted harassment. But you know, shouldn't we give, mustn't we give some meaning to the legislature's amendment and therefore treat this fact pattern differently in light of the amended statute?
I think you can. And again, I would compare this to that Davidson v. Webb, which did come out before the statute change. And the reason I point to that is in this specific case, appellant didn't call respondent while knocking on her door, while ringing on the doorbell, while honking his horn. Like, it wasn't everything happening at once, even for a 2-hour period straight. He chose to do an act, chose to have an incident occur, stopped that incident, chose to start another one. And again, sequentially over the course of 2 hours, started and stopped separate incidents.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your arguments. Counsel for appellant, you may, as stated earlier, you have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I respectfully take issue with counsel's argument that each act constitutes an incident. I just don't think that that's what the legislature intended when it inserted that crucial language of repeated incidents into the statute. And in fact, that type of logic then would turn Rickmeyer on its head, because in Rickmeyer, you had not only, you didn't have just one kind of communication. You had videotaping, you had audio taping, you had calls to law enforcement, and then you had a threat. So the court looked at that 30-minute time period, multiple acts, all of which constituted harassment. They were unwanted. I think those actions had an adverse or were intended to have an adverse impact on the respondent's safety, security, well-being, and saw it as one incident. And I think really that is the issue before this court. We have multiple actions on the part of the appellant, each of which arguably could be construed as harassment, but that's only the beginning of the analysis. The court then has to look to that critical component, the object of the phrase, which is whether this conduct constitutes repeated incidents. And I go back again to, I think, what just seems to apply with this behavioral incident analysis. What was the harassment concerning in this case? It was involving one single issue on one day during one finite time period, 2 hours. So to say that the texting and the honking constitutes repeated incidents, which could have occurred within seconds of one another, that's kind of the district court's ultimate opinion, that if he only had done one, no harm, no foul under the statute. Temporally, that just doesn't make a lot of sense, because the existence of two within the same argument certainly didn't carry Rickmeyer to this court's affirming of that HRO. In fact, the court rejected that type of analysis there. And I think it should reject it here, because the legislature's intent clearly is that these incidents must be repeated. And the definition of incident must be that there's some distinct difference, like you had ultimately in Peterson, where he's coming back the second day doing repeated harassing behavior over a 14-hour time period. I think that the court's ruling in this case, if the court reverses, can fit well within the parameters of both Bierke, Peterson, and Rickmeyer, which is why we're asking the court to overturn this HRO and reverse the district court's determination. Thank you very much.
Ms. Braun, yes. It sounds like both parties agree that we just look at the plain language and the dictionary definitions. And if that's the case, why do we need to look at a definition such as single behavioral incident? It seems like respondent raises a good point there, that doesn't seem to really be applicable here.
Well, the district court was certainly confused about the plain language, I think, here. And look, when you've got analysis under whether conduct is a singular behavioral incident in the criminal context, it's not always clear. And I think that there has to be some clarity when dealing with this issue, because it falls between Bierke and Rickmeyer. And I think having a bright line test for the court to analyze, you know, what is the source of the conflict? I think that really gets at the issue for the court of, from the legislature's intent. Is this a single isolated incident, which the district court in this case certainly acknowledged? In a footnote, the court talks about there not being any claims of harassment before or after this incident, but then determines ultimately that this these acts constituted multiple incidents. So if you adopt that type of a test, you look at the intention and the actions of the actors in determining, you know, what the conduct was in the case. And I think there you get to the legislative intent is someone upset about one incident and may act in a way that we don't condone, but doesn't rise to the level of requiring a restraining order, because at all other times there has not been harassing or problematic conduct by the actor. And I think that was the intention of the modification of the statute. And I think by the court looking to a test that's akin to the behavioral incident test, it could effectuate the legislature's intent of making that modification meaningful and real for the district courts going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Braun. Thank you to both counsel for your excellent arguments, which were well prepared and well focused, and we appreciate that. Helps us find the right answer. And so the court will take the case under advisement and issue its opinion in writing within 90 days.